Senate will come to order. Will members please vote to signify their presence?
Roll shows 20 members present this morning, Mr. President.
We have a quorum to do business. Would members please stand for the invocation by Father Jerome Swalinski of the St. Nicholas Orthodox Christian Church.
Christ is risen. This day is one of special commemoration for the departed. So as we pray this morning, please bear in mind your departed predecessors and loved ones who have gone on to their rest. Let us pray to the Lord, Lord of mercy. Thou only Creator, who with wisdom profound mercifully orderest all things, and givest unto all that which is useful, give rest, O Lord, to the souls of thy servants who have fallen asleep. We pray for all those who have lived and worked in this great land, those who died because of the hazards of their occupations, oil workers, pilots, fishermen, rescuers, especially the master and crew of the fishing vessel of Vanek. Pray also for those whose lives were tragically lost by abuse, disease, neglect, or suicide. We pray for those who defended our shores, especially those who fought in the battles of Dutch Harbor, Attu, Kiska, and the Komodorskis, the Aleut evacuees, and others displaced by the war, and especially those who perished in relocation camps. The villages which died, Attu, McCushion, Kashaga, and Bjorka. We remember also native elders, pioneers, statesmen, territorial and state governors, our Russian predecessors, explorers and early settlers, the Promyshleniki, and our forerunners among the native peoples, the discoverers of this great land who first populated the North American continent, and all those we have in mind who have gone on to their rest before us. With the saints, grant them rest, O Christ God, where there is neither sickness nor sorrow nor sighing, but life everlasting. May their memories be eternal. Christ is risen.
Senator Kelly, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Hoffman?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, so ordered. Will the Secretary please certify the journal?
I wish to certify the correctness of the journal for the 106th legislative day.
Senator Taylor.
Move to ask unanimous consent the journal be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, so ordered. Are there guests for introduction? Guests for introduction. Brings us down to messages from the governor.
There are no messages from the governor this morning, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
Message dated April 27, Mr. President. The House has passed and returned Senate Bill number 240, title amended, repealing the tax on punch boards and certain coin-operated devices. This bill has been referred for enrollment. Messages dated April 27th. The House has concurred in the following Senate amendments. Senate CS for House Bill number 392, Resources, Reports, Fish Tax and Salmon Products. Senate CS for House Bill 395, Judiciary, Civil Liability Resulting from the Use of a Defibrillator in Providing Emergency Aid. Message dated April 27th. The House has passed and transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 34, Labor and Commerce, amended by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, establishing a joint committee on electric utility restructuring.
Judiciary.
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 56, rules by the House Rules Committee, relating to uranium mining and transfer of linear induction motor research vehicle to Alaska.
Community and Regional Affairs.
Committee substitute for House Bill 203, Judiciary, by the House Judiciary Committee, enacting the actions for unlawful trade practices.
Labor and Commerce and Judiciary.
Message dated April 27th. Dear Mr. President, the House has passed committee substitute for Senate Bill 221, Finance, with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Bill number 221, Finance, relating to negatively amortizing loans secured by owner-occupied real property originated under a program approved or sponsored by the state or federal government, including congressionally chartered national corporations, and returning for consideration.
Senator Taylor.
I would ask unanimous consent that the Senate concur in the House amendment to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 221 Finance, thus adopting House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 221 Finance, and would recommend a yes vote. Before we take the motion, however, I'll object just for purposes of explaining the changes that were made in that legislation after it left this body. If you look on page 1, line 11, following the words, quote, sponsored by,
The language on lines 12, 13, and 14 were simply rearranged, and on line 14, following the words "the state," the word "if" was added, and then all the language on page 2, lines 1 through 19, was added. The effect of the changes made in the House Finance Committee was to ensure that any state-approved or sponsored reverse annuity mortgage program contained the same restrictions on the lender that are currently in federal regulations for Fannie Mae and FHA mortgages. The provisions added in Alaska Statute 45.45.010, small F2A-D, or through D, which apply to state programs, are consistent with federal regulations. The sponsor of the legislation has no opposition to the changes made in the other body.
Further debate? Seeing no further debate, questions for the body. Shall the Senate concur in House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 221 Finance? Members may proceed to vote. If any member failed to vote, Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 20 yeas and 0 nays, the Senate has concurred in House amendments, thus adopting House committee substitute for Senate Bill 221 Finance. Senator Mackey.
Mr. President, may we revert back to introduction of guests?
Without objection, Senator, you have the floor.
It's a great pleasure for me today to introduce a former member of this body who is in the Ziegler Gallery. Senator Zaroff and his wife Barbara have joined us, and I'm happy to report that Senator Zaroff told me yesterday he has just got back from Seattle from his second recent checkup from his battle with cancer and has got a clean bill. And I know I speak for the rest of the body when we say we're very happy to see that. Please welcome Senator Zaroff and his wife Barbara back to the Senate.
Senator Zaroff, as a former member of this body, do you have any words of wisdom for us?
Well, I do, but you probably don't want to hear them. Well, it's just a pleasure to be back and say hello to the many friends. I know that you were with me when I received my good news at that time. But it's just a real pleasure to get back, and I just want to thank everybody.
Senator Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. President, for that. I have three other guests that I would like to introduce in the Miller Gallery behind me. A friend of mine, Norm Wooten, who's a member of the Kodiak School Board. Norm has been a leader in the education community for many years. He recently served as president of the Statewide School Board Association. Also with him is a professional hunting guide, Pat Jacobson, who is newly elected to the Kodiak School Board and is doing an outstanding job in that role. And also Betty Walters, who is the superintendent of the school in Kodiak. She has worked for the school district for many years, working her way up to the superintendency, which she obtained the year before last and is is very well thought of in that community. Her husband, I have to mention, is a retired Coast Guard pilot, Tom Walters, who is also the vice mayor in Kodiak. But he is one of the highest decorated pilots in the whole United States Coast Guard. From time to time, we hear about rescues on the high seas in the middle of the night and wind and icing conditions and 30-foot swells and these kinds of things. He has a number of those types of things under his belt, and I know the community is very proud of that. He's an outstanding Alaskan and wanted to mention that as I introduce Betty Walters. Please help me welcome all of them to the Senate.
Senator Torgerson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Under introduction of guests, I introduced these people yesterday, but they weren't in the gallery, so I'll reintroduce them today. Practice yesterday. First, I have president of our school board, Marianne Gross from Homer, Susan Larned, also a member of the school board, Deb Germano from Homer, and Deborah Mullins from the Central Peninsula area. Please help me welcome them to the Senate.
For the guests. Brings us down to communications.
There are no communications this morning, Mr. President.
Reports to standing committees.
Reports on the governor's confirmation. Dear Mr. President, pursuant to AS 3905080, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee reviewed the following with regard to confirmation of the governor's appointments. State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, Kathy Gardner, Donald J. Iverson, Patrick Cowan, Scott McLean, Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, Inga Boulevard, Alaska Labor Relations Agency, Alfred Temenji, Real Estate Commission, Audrey Foldo, Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, Florence S. Rooney, Mar Stemp, James Williams. The committee with no comment forwards these appointees' names to the full Senate for consideration in joint session. The reports were signed by Senator Lehman Chair, Senator Mackey, and Senator Kelly. Judiciary Committee considered Senate Bill number 190 relating to eminent domain and to negotiations to purchase property before it is taken through eminent domain. Recommends it be replaced with the committee substitute. Signed no recommendation, Senator Taylor Chair, Senators Ellis, Parnell, Pearson, Miller. Previous year, a fiscal note. Senate Bill number 190 has no further referral.
Rules.
Judiciary Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill number 16, Finance, Juvenile Delinquency Procedures. Recommends it be replaced with Senate CS. Signed and due pass, Senator Taylor Chair, Senators Pierce, Miller. Senator Ellis, signed no recommendation. Previous fiscal and zero fiscal notes. CS for House Bill number 16, Finance, as a further referral to the Finance Committee. Judiciary Committee considered House Bill 335, Uniform Interstate Child Custody Act, and recommends due pass. Signed due pass, Senator Taylor Chair, Senators Ellis, Miller, and Pierce. Previous year, a fiscal note. House Bill number 335 has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 370, Finance, Appropriations for Relief of the 97 Economic Disaster in Bristol Bay. Recommends it be replaced with Senate CS. Signed due pass, Senator Sharp and Pierce co-chairs, Senators Phillips, Parnell, Donnelly, and Torgerson. CS for House Bill number 370, Finance, has no further referral.
Rules.
Judiciary Committee considered sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution number 10, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to the election and the duties of the Attorney General. Signed due pass, Senator Taylor Chair, Senator Miller. Signed do not pass, Senator Pierce. Fiscal notes attached.
Go ahead.
Sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution number 10 has no further referral.
I will refer that to the Finance Committee at this particular time, if it does have fiscal notes. Senator Taylor?
I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate stand in recess for a Rules Committee meeting.
And immediately?
And immediately there following a caucus?
It would be the intent of, be my intent after we have our caucus at roughly 12 o'clock. We have been asked to be out in front, outside in front of the building for a group picture of both bodies and the staff. So, and immediately after the taking of that picture, I would expect that everyone would be back in so we can take up the day and calendar.
So the tentative is that we'd be back here about 12:30.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Without objection, we stand in recess. So we'll come back to order. We are back under the reports of standing committees.
Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill 325, Finance amended, making appropriations for their operating loan program expenses of state government. Recommends calendar. Signed the report, Senator Kelly Chair, Senators Torgerson, Lehman, and Taylor. Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill 326, Finance, Mental Health Budget. Recommends calendar. Signed for placement of the calendar, Senator Kelly Chair, Senators Torgerson, Lehman, and Taylor. These bills appear on today's calendar. Those are all standing committee reports today, Mr. President.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports this morning.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
There are no Senate resolutions.
The introduction of Senate bills.
Senate Bill number 359 by the Rules Committee by request, an act relating to insurance premium taxes.
Labor and Commerce.
Those are all the bills for introduction this afternoon.
Brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar.
For House Bill number 325, Finance amended, budget reserve on supermajority failed by the House Finance Committee, an act making appropriations to the offering and loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and to capitalize funds and provide for an effective date. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with the Senate CS, signing due pass, Senators Pierce and Sharp co-chairs, Senators Phillips, Parnell, Torkelson, and Donnelly. Senator Adams signed no recommendation. Rules recommends calendar. Signed for placement in the calendar, Senator Kelly Chair, Senators Torgerson, Lehman, and Taylor. There is a Senate CS. Finance.
Senator Pierce.
Would move the Senate CS for CS House Bill 325, Finance, in lieu of the original bill, and I would call the House on both this motion and also on the calendar.
There is objection to the motion, and the Senate has been called. We will stand at ease until the call has been. Senate will come back to order. We have a motion before the body to adopt the Senate Finance Committee substitute. Is there a objection? There is objection. Senator Duncan?
Thank you, Mr. President. If I may speak to my objection to the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Mr. President, there are in the operating budget several areas I believe that still cause concern for the minority members of this body, and that's why I want to object to the Finance Committee substitute and just very briefly talk about those. We have put on the desk, on your desk and on every member's desk, four amendments that address our major concerns and our major priorities as far as the operating budget goes for the coming fiscal year, and areas which we believe need to be taken care of in order to adequately address the needs of the citizens of this state. And just very briefly, those four areas do include general relief medical, adequate funding to take care of our poorest and sickest people in this state. We believe that the funding needs to be adequate to do that. We also believe that we need to be sure that we've adequately funded child preventive services to help prevent child abuse and ensure that our children can grow up in a safe environment and in a healthy environment. Third is we believe that we do need to strengthen funding for our educational system, not just K through 12, but also for our post-secondary educational system. And that means that we have to make a strong commitment to the University of Alaska system on a statewide basis. And fourth, we believe that we have to be careful what we do when we reduce revenue sharing and municipal assistance, and that the proposal that's before us, the reduction in revenue sharing and municipal assistance, will impact local communities negatively and will mean an increased property tax rate in many local communities and an increased property tax for many citizens of this state. So we have identified those four areas as our major priorities and areas that we hope this body will see fit to correct. Again, it seems clear to me that we need to take care of our sickest, our poorest, and our sickest citizens. We need to protect our children. We need to have a good quality educational system, and we need to ensure that the document that we pass in this body does not increase taxes on the citizens of this state. Those four amendments that you see before you will address those problems. We know that many times the debate on the operating budget and the amendment process can be long and arduous and take a lot of time. We have, as a minority, identified the four critical areas that if this body was to adopt those four critical areas, we could probably have the operating budget out of this body in a very short period of time. So we encourage your serious consideration of those four items, those four areas, and believe we have identified what we consider to be most critical needs. And I remove my objection.
Objection has been removed. Hearing no objection, the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted.
Senate CS for CS for House Bill 325 Finance, an act making appropriations for operating and loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and capitalized funds making appropriations under Article 9, Section 17C, Constitution of the State of Alaska from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, effective date. Amendment number 1 by Senator Parnell, page 32, line 11.
Senator Parnell.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 1.
There is objection. Senator, you have the floor.
Thank you. Amendment number 1 funds the Catastrophic and Chronic Illness Assistance Program with $1.9 million from General Relief Medical. Weeks of debate over General Relief Medical have spotlighted the fact the program is not working as well as it could be for poor people suffering from catastrophic, chronic, or acute illnesses. Before we get into that debate, though, let's talk about what General Relief Medical is. There's been a lot of attention focused on it. Pure and simple, General Relief Medical is a bad debt reimbursement program for healthcare providers. Healthcare providers in the state of Alaska provide approximately $150 million worth of uncompensated care to the poor in Alaska or to people who are unwilling to pay their debts. $150 million, and yet General Relief Medical funds, the authorized level for funding in General Relief Medical this year is $2.8 million. Essentially, that money goes to reimburse healthcare providers for their bad debts. As an example, some of the reimbursements that have been made to healthcare providers kind of illustrate that bad debt reimbursement. For instance, when the department is charged over $40,000 for a particular service, they've been reimbursed for about $1,300 of the service. When they've been charged by a healthcare provider for $34,000 plus, they've been reimbursed for $840. There are all different levels of reimbursement, up to 28.5% reimbursement. simply put, GRM is a bad debt reimbursement program, and we're talking about the catastrophic, chronic, and acute conditions suffered by poor people in the state of Alaska. Now that we know what GRM is, let's look at what's wrong currently with the program. The department does not follow its statutory mandate to prioritize services when it's running low on funds. Instead, they start moving dollars out of the Medicaid program and pull them into GRM to start funding that population, thus, in my view, depriving the Medicaid-eligible population of necessary funds. There's been little accountability in the program, where the department doesn't adequately track patients' diagnosis. So, for example, they don't know whether people with chronic needs are even being served on a regular basis. We did hear testimony that at least one person appeared to be, but the department didn't have the information for that. The department has also been expanding the population eligible for GRM, I believe, at the cost of the people truly in need of the service. For example, chronically mentally ill people are served under the program with respect, as I understand it, with respect to payment for medication. These non-Medicaid eligible people can be covered, and we are actually funding $11 million under community mental health services grants. That money is designed for people in just this situation, and they ought to be covered by that program, those grants. They should not be spread into another program and then eventually spread into another program. I think we need to start consolidating our programs and deliver the service. Additionally, 50% of the patients covered in GRM receive elective abortions. And most, if not all of these, exceed the income limitations that you've heard bannered around, the $300 monthly. So what we're seeing happening is we're seeing groups that could be funded in other areas. For instance, abortions in the case of rape, incest, and life of the mother, they could be covered under Medicaid, under federal law. So we have population groups that are really eating into the available reimbursement funds for poor people who suffer truly catastrophic, acute, and chronic needs. GRM, in my opinion, should be replaced by moving these funds from GRM to the Catastrophic Illness Assistance Program. This amendment moves, as I said earlier, $1.9 million out of GRM and into the Catastrophic Illness Assistance Program to ensure that debts incurred by people with catastrophic illness get covered at a better rate than the GRM program currently allows. The goal is to work towards covering the debts incurred or partially covering those debts incurred by the poorest of the poor for those catastrophic and chronic needs. So who's eligible? Anyone who has suffered a catastrophic illness defined in statute as an illness or injury that results in medical expenses of over $1,000 during a period not to exceed 12 months. And the department has the statutes in place. They have regulations in place which can be rewritten or can be followed as they are. With that, Mr. President, I just urge your support of Amendment Number 1 to truly meet the needs of those suffering catastrophic, chronic, or acute conditions. Thank you.
Senator Duncan. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to oppose Amendment Number 1, and really this amendment is about a debate on whether or not we're going to provide medical services to our sickest and poorest. Because if we adopt this amendment, we will not be providing medical services to the sickest and poorest of our population. It just won't happen, and I want to give you several reasons why, and several reasons why this is not a well-thought-out amendment, nor a reasonable or rational approach to ensuring that our citizens in this state who otherwise cannot afford it can receive medical care. For one, just the administrative difficulty of getting a program set up and going under new statutes, under the Catastrophic Illness Program, in and of itself says it won't be happening for at least 6 months after the beginning of this fiscal year. The Catastrophic Illness Program, of course, hasn't operated for a number of years. There are no regulations there. There is no way that this program could begin in July 1. It needs new regulations, and it needs a new committee to review the cases that come before it. That's what the statutes require. The sponsor of the amendment would have you believe that all they have to do is transfer regulations. We asked that question. I asked that question of the department. Can that be done? Can you transfer regulations from the GR Med to Catastrophic Illness Program, and the answer is no, you can't do that. You have to go back out through the public hearing process. You have to write the regulations to fit the program, and it's going to take probably at a minimum until January 1st of 1999 to get that in place and get the program operating. So in and of its, that in and of itself means that for the next six months, there will not be any services to our poorest and our sickest. Secondly, we're creating a new bureaucracy, a new committee that has to review these cases that comes before, that would come in. And where is the money coming from? Where is the funding coming from to support that committee? There's no transition here. There's no provisions that money would continue in the GR Med program until the new bureaucracy, the new committee is up and running, until the regulations are in place. It's just a quick cutoff as of June 30th. And beginning July 1, there's no money available for our sickest and our poorest of the population. The sponsor talked about the fact that all GR Med is doing is reimbursing bad debt and charity care. That's what he wants to get away from. That's what he wants to get away from. The catastrophic illness program is meant to do just that, to reimburse providers for bad debt and charity care. So it does just exactly what the sponsor of the amendment wants to get away from doing if he transfers that money out of GR Med over to catastrophic illness. It also means that not that the large number, even if the program was up and operating January 1 of 1999, that a lot of our poor and sickest people probably wouldn't get any reimbursement, because once you restart the catastrophic illness program and get that in place, there's a few out there with major catastrophic illnesses. They could come in, have their application in much earlier, be at the front of the line, and eat up the entire budget in a very short period of time. And so those people who really should be being served by GR Med wouldn't receive the money, wouldn't receive the service. GR Med is meant to fund a few or a lot of people, a little bit for a lot of people. Is meant to help provide basic preventive health care services to our poorest and our sickest, not meant just to fund a few major catastrophic illness problems. So I think it has some difficulty just in getting it up and running. The other concern that I have, and if you have taken any time to look at the figures, the data on who is served by the GR Med program, you'll find that just restrictions in and of itself of the catastrophic illness program will cut a lot of those people out. And the sponsor of the amendment mentioned this, criteria is different. The eligibility criteria is different. For catastrophic illness, there's no income limit. No income limit whatsoever. And that's where we're transferring this money. For GR Med, there's $300 a month income limit. For catastrophic illness, you can have $1,000 in liquid assets. For GR Med, it's $500 a month in assets. So there's a big difference in criteria. And then on top of that, if you look at the figures and the data from the department as to who is benefiting or who they're serving under GR Med, you'll find that about 33% of those people have been reimbursed for services of under $1,000 total. Now, the catastrophic illness program that we're transferring this to, one of the ways you qualify for it is that you have to have catastrophic illness means illness or injury that results in medical expenses of over $1,000 during a period not to exceed 12 months. So you have to have expenses of over $1,000. But we know from the data we've got from the department that GR Med, 33% of the people in GR Med have medical expenses of under $1,000. They wouldn't qualify any longer. Those people wouldn't be able to receive basic services, basic preventive health care services. For drugs, I think it'd probably be especially difficult for many people to incur the debt to get reimbursed. And so they would probably, because they're very low income people, be going without the medication, the drugs they need to address their illness. This is a poorly thought out amendment, and really is an amendment that's going to do great harm and take away medical services to our poorest and our sickest. This has nothing to do, set the abortion argument aside, whether GR Med is funding abortion or not. That argument, that has nothing to do with what really the impact of this amendment will be. The impact of this amendment will be to cut out 33% of the people who are on GR Med because they have bills of $1,000 or less. And by the time the program is up and running by January 1st, 1999, those with catastrophic illnesses, a few catastrophic illnesses could eat up the entire budget, and a greater number of GR Med people wouldn't be served. This really is a question, a vote on this amendment is a question of whether we want to serve the sickest and the poorest in the state of Alaska, or whether we want to ignore them. I'm going to vote to serve them and to be sure they get basic medical services by opposing this amendment.
For the debate.
Seeing no further debate, Senator Mackey. Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to ask a question to the sponsor of the amendment. My understanding is, on this program, how this program reimburses providers, is aren't these services already provided to the people, to the poor people and the people that are in need of these services, and then isn't GR Med used as a means to refund a part or a portion of what those expenses that were already incurred by the hospitals or doctors? And could you give an example of how that actually works in terms of the amount of money that actually gets reimbursed to these providers under this current program the way it is now?
Senator Parnell.
The answer is yes, as I understand it. For example, if you're in an emergency situation and you, for instance, have a spinal cord injury and you're treated for that and you're the poorest of the poor and the hospital, you know, spends a lot of money taking care of you and you can't pay for it, they will bill back to Medicaid, unless you're not eligible for Medicaid. Then it gets billed back to GRM, General Relief Medical. And in that case, and this is an extreme case, for instance, but when it costs tens of thousands of dollars in charges, they're reimbursed $80 or $90. In another case, if you are, let me give another example. If you suffer a fracture, and this is a pretty serious fracture, but you are, the charge that the hospital incurs for taking care of you is $40,000+. In this particular case, they're reimbursed in excess of $8,000. So it is a reimbursement type program to the healthcare providers.
Senator Taylor.
I think the essential thing for all of us to remember is, contrary to the debate offered, is that all of these services will continue to be provided. $150 million worth of services last year were provided unreimbursed. All of these services, all of this angst about whether or not the poorest of the poor will receive those services is rhetoric, because they will continue to receive those services. After those services have been provided, then those health care providers will seek reimbursement from various state and federal programs. They'll seek it through welfare, Medicaid. They'll seek it through Medicare for someone over 65. They'll seek it through private insurance. They'll seek it through every source they can. Unfortunately, with $150 million worth of care provided last year, only a very small fraction of that was reimbursed by this program. Will the failure to fund this program cause any of that care to go away? No. That's the simple answer. Now, who are we, through this amendment, going to provide care for? Let's use the same words the minority leader used. Who are the poorest of the poor or the sickest of the sick? We've already defined those in Alaska law. We call it a catastrophic illness. What could be more exemplary? If you're living in a small village and you have come down with hepatitis A, B, or C, where we lead the nation in hepatitis, and now you have major liver damage and you're going to require a liver transplant, that's catastrophic. What if you have lost the function of your kidneys, as two of my constituents now are sitting there on dialysis machines? The cost of dialysis per year runs into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. That is catastrophic. If we have to choose, and it's tragic that we have to choose in this day and age, but if we have to choose, do we reimburse a pittance on a few charges for services that are already going to be rendered? Or do we focus those monies, those precious dollars, to the most seriously afflicted in our entire society, those which have catastrophic illnesses? I don't think there's an issue there. Both funding mechanisms provide for a similar population. One population involves those people that we would not call catastrophic, those people that we wouldn't use an adjective like that to define their condition. And the other focuses those few precious dollars on our truly sickest and poorest and most impacted constituents in the whole state. I was very disappointed when, under a previous administration, when my party was not in control, that program was eliminated. But to suggest that there's going to have to be some huge rewrite of regulations, There are regulations on the books. The statute is on the books. The only thing that's been missing has been the funding for these people. And if we have to make a choice, I'm going to choose to go with those people that are on dialysis, that need kidney transplants and need liver transplants. Those are the people I think we, the state, should be coming to the aid of, because they are the most severely, catastrophically impacted by illness.
Senator Duncan.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I don't disagree that we should be coming to aid of those people, but for the majority leader to be able to, and that's why I had to rise on this, to infer that we're putting enough money in the budget, $1.9 million with this amendment, to take care of those catastrophic illnesses, the people who need dialysis and a kidney transplant and whatever else they may need, and still take care of GR Med, the poorest of the poor, just doesn't hold water. It just doesn't hold water. The $1.9 million is being talked about here doesn't even meet the need of GR Med. That's about a $4 million need. And if this majority leader remembers back to when we had the catastrophic illness program, he will realize that the catastrophic illness program was costing at a minimum $5 million a year. There's those kind of catastrophic illness needs out there, $5 million or $10 million a year. And so to infer that we're solving a problem for everybody who has a catastrophic illness by transferring this money isn't correct. Isn't correct and isn't near being correct, because two or three major catastrophic illnesses, which I believe we should be taking care of, and I have great empathy for those people who have catastrophic illnesses and can't get care, won't be taken care of by transferring 1.9 LGR Med. The impact of this is maybe we can do some catastrophic illness, but we're eliminating the care for the sickest and the poorest. The 33% who won't even qualify for this program. Won't even qualify for this program because they don't have expenses of $1,000 per year. They can't be reimbursed because they don't have, or the providers can't be reimbursed because they don't have expenses of $1,000 per year. Now, the other thing, which I guess doesn't make any difference to the majority, is that if you understand the healthcare system, and if no one pays for the bills, if we don't pay for the care of the poorest and the neediest, the providers, they have bad debt, they have uncompensated care, but let me tell you, they're collecting that money. And that's going to increase the cost of health care for everybody who has a health care policy in this state. It's trying to drive up your cost, because it's cost shifting, and that's what happens. Providers will cost shift that over to the majority leader and his policy. The providers will cost shift that over to every small business person in this state who has a policy. They'll cost shift it over to every individual who has a policy. And so we're standing on the floor saying we're doing great things by adopting this amendment. We're going to take care of a few catastrophic illnesses when that program is averaging $5 million or even greater when it was in place. We're reducing total funding for GR Med from the $4 million that's needed to 1.9. And we're saying, but it's okay because we're going to cost shift over to our friends and neighbors and make them pay more. That's poor public policy.
Question before the body. Shall amendment number one pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays, amendment number one has passed the Senate.
Maybe we have an ease, please.
Senate will stand at ease. Senate will come back to order.
Amendment number two by Senators Duncan, Adams, Ellis, Hoffman, and Lincoln, page 32, line 11, and it's been distributed.
Senator Duncan. Thank you, Mr. President. With a technical correction, and I'll read the technical correction first. It would read to delete zero and insert $2,838,700 because the 1.9 was moved. And so I with the leave of the body, and if they understand, I will move amendment number two.
There is objection. Senator, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Amendment number two, of course, does address the GR Med program, which was part of the debate on amendment number one. The purpose of this amendment was, as I said, to address what we and the minority, the Democrats consider as one of the major priorities that we have this year, is to ensure that the poorest and sickest people in this state can continue to receive medical services. The original amount that was there of 1.9, which has been transferred, wasn't adequate
by itself. Of course, the zero that's there now is completely inadequate, so there's not much debate needed on that point. Zero doesn't do anything, just doesn't do the job. And since we have now taken care of catastrophic illness, funded a catastrophic illness program, which I don't have any problem with doing that, now we should go back and fund a GR Med program. We should provide funding for those people who do have a real need as far as low-income people and people who qualify under this program with an income of $300 a month or less and with $500 in assets. Those are the people who should be served. This amendment would do just that and would bring it up to the level that was funded in FY98, which I think is a good level to start from, although we know there's also a supplemental request for fiscal year 98, that there's probably more need there. Last year, we served under the GR Med program 856 or thereabouts of the poorest and sickest of Alaska citizens, and those people shouldn't be overlooked. And the way this budget is presently written, they will be overlooked, and I think that's not good public policy and not a public policy we should adopt. There's immediate need for people under this program who may have a terminal illness. They may need chemo treatment for cancer. They may have diabetes, seizure conditions, chronic mental illness, a whole list of illnesses, which I believe they need to have care for, which they require care for, and which is an obligation of this state to ensure that they can receive benefit for. Now, there was a reference in the previous debate about where these people were, about someone in a village who might need care, but the data shows that the majority of these people come from urban areas. The majority of people that the General Relief Medical Program serves comes from urban areas. In fact, it shows that 44% of the individuals served by GR Med reside in Anchorage, 44%. 13% in Fairbanks, 7% in Wasilla, 4% each in Juneau and Palmer. And if my math is correct, that's about 72% of the program comes from those urban areas. So it's not a program that's designed just for rural Alaska or for small communities, but nearly half of the program, half of the people who are served by GR Med come from and reside in Anchorage. So, Mr. President, I think the previous amendment to move the money, unfortunately, you know, the result may be to have a catastrophic illness program, but unfortunately leaves many, many people without hope for medical services, and I think that's wrong, and we should adopt this amendment.
For the debate.
Seeing no, Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, support the amendment. I probably should have spoke during the last amendment, and I will not speak about amendment number one necessarily, but in looking at what amendment number two does, I think that, as the previous speaker has stated, that there's a huge segment of people that are going to be left out of medical care. And I think we all recognize the need for us to have the medical care for all people in Alaska, that we shouldn't leave any segment out, that if we expect people to be productive citizens of the state of Alaska, then they have to be physically, mentally fit in order for them to be productive citizens in the state. And as the catastrophic illness program was intended, and there's going to have to be major rewrite on to tie in now the folks that don't fit under that category, because that was set up to target the population, was families with incomes above the poverty level. That was the intent of the catastrophic illness program. And it was those average income families facing the danger of losing homes, depleting savings, or borrowing from friends or relatives in order to pay for the medical bills that was associated with prolonged illnesses. The money that we're appropriating now, I would suggest again, as has been stated, under amendment number one, is not enough to cover those that would fit under the category of the GR medical. And the program, the target population under the catastrophic illness program, which is much different, is to reach the average income individuals and families that were either uninsured or underinsured. and it was considered a last resource for individuals who utilize all the other possible sources of payment. So, Mr. President, we are truly leaving out those who are of low income, those that can ill afford to pay for their medical benefits, their payments for the prescription drugs that they need and for the hospitalization or other equipment that they might need to lead productive lives. If this is an effort, and I'm just saying if it is an effort, that to do away with any programs for abortion, if that's the intent, then we have really pulled off a sham to the general public, those that need the services the most, just to identify a very small population in our state. And Mr. President, I would suggest that if, and underscore if, that was the intent, then this is a poor way of doing it, to sacrifice those Alaskans who can ill afford medical care, who can ill afford to go to other sources in the state or to families to provide that. threatening circumstances that some unfortunately find themselves in.
For the debate, Senator Mackey.
Mr. President, I hate to rise again on this issue, but I guess I fail to see, I fail to understand exactly how this program actually works. My understanding is that they're provided, as the senator from South Anchorage said, they're provided these services like on a pro bono kind of thing, much like a number of lawyers do around the state for Alaska Legal Services. They provide a lot of free services, and that department kind of administers that. My understanding is that these folks that we're talking about here are provided the services, and the reimbursement is applied for and received back at a fraction of what the costs actually were. Can somebody tell me, do these people actually have to apply to the department for this program to get assistance in advance before they receive the services? That's not my understanding of how this works. And, you know, there's some real strong statements being made, but it's contrary to what my understanding is. As to these folks that don't have the money, they don't have the resources, they don't qualify for Medicaid or Medicare, that they can go in and get some of these services, and then it's up to the providers themselves to actually apply for the reimbursement. And there seems to be some real conflicting statements here, and you know, I'd like to have that clarified if I'm not, in fact, accurate. Senator Duncan.
Well, Mr. President, I think it works two ways. I think there are cases, there are sometimes that they do apply in advance to receive the services, and so there may be cases where they don't do that. But you know, what it really boils down to is we're playing a game of Russian roulette with the sickest and the poorest people in this state. Because I got to say, we're counting on providers then, because this program has zero funding in it. We're counting on providers across this state to say, we know there's no money to apply for. We know we're not going to get reimbursed because there's no money in the state operating budget to do that. We'll provide the service, and we hope we'll recoup our costs some other way. And some providers may decide at some point they're just not going to do that, that they're not going to provide services, that they can't afford to. So we're playing a game of Russian roulette with the poor people's health in this state. I think that's unacceptable and should be unacceptable. And if the providers do go ahead and provide that service, knowing that they are not going to get reimbursed from the state because the GR Med program is zeroed out, they're going to do that knowing that the way they're going to survive and the way they're going to be able to continue their practice is shift the cost to people who can pay. They're going to shift it to the senator from Craig and me and you and every other citizen in this state who has a health care policy or who has the money to pay for health care services. That's what the result is.
For the debate, Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. The urgency that I have for seeing Amendment Number 2 pass and there actually be funding for General Relief Medical has gone up dramatically after the action of the body on Amendment Number 1 of shutting down essentially the General Relief Medical Program and reactivating the Catastrophic Illness Program. Anyone who served here around 1987 or before remember the Catastrophic Illness Program. And the budget deliberations that went around here, we actually had people with children with leukemia who would fly to Juneau in their last desperate attempt to convince legislators to fund the Catastrophic Illness Program in the budget so that their families that meet the non-poverty guidelines, the income levels above the poverty line, which the CAT Illness Program was intended for, so that there would be enough money in that operating budget to cover their family members in very dire, desperate circumstances. The General Relief Medical Program, as has been pointed out on this floor, is a dramatically different kind of program targeted to a different group of people who don't have the kind of resources the people in the CAT Illness Program meet those income guidelines. The idea that we're shutting down General Relief and if we don't pass Amendment Number 2, not funding General Relief at all and switching the money over to a completely different program leaves a lot of people in limbo. When it's medical services, there's often charity care that's provided by medical facilities across the state. But when we talk about prescription drugs, it doesn't work in the same way. Hospitals cover charity care. Most pharmacies do not. For prescription drugs, we're talking about cancer therapy, heart medicine, insulin, psychotropic drugs. It's a fairly serious, it's an extremely serious list of prescription drugs that these folks need and rely on every day to maintain themselves. When someone waits until their medical condition gets so dire that they go into the emergency room of a local hospital, that exponentially increases the amount of charity care, let alone the human tragedy that can ensue if someone waits that long to go have their medical condition taken care of. A big benefit, a social benefit and personal benefit to these people of General Relief Medical is that they're able to be maintained on their medication and avoid some of those more expensive costs that, as the member from downtown mentioned, get passed on, shifted around the system, and ultimately paid by the rest of us, government and private citizens. I have a constituent, Mr. President. Her name is Charlene Locoshanis. Some people thought that I put her up to this, or that someone in the Department of Health and Social Services put her up to this. She resented very much the comment made by a member of another body that she was someone's puppet. She's a beneficiary of the General Relief Medical Program. I won't go into all of her personal details. I don't think that would be appropriate to go into all the details of why she's on this program. But the actions of this body to date in trying to eliminate General Relief Medical, and now exacerbated by Amendment Number 1, have created with her a very effective, a very fiery grassroots activist. It would be fair to say that she's on the warpath when it comes to what she believes politicians are doing to her life. She believes she's being toyed with by folks who have a very sincere agenda that is impacting the General Relief Medical Program and our discussion and funding of it. She's someone that I think has probably communicated with each of you individually. Some of you may think that she's gone a bit overboard in the way she's reacted to this, but I do not discredit her in any way for taking this action toward her personally, for anyone else on the General Relief Medical Program, for thinking that this is aimed directly at them. How could they feel anything else? If their life depends on medicine, and we're talking about doing away with the program or now defunding the program, and no one in this body, as has been pointed out, should hold out any hope that these folks will be served through the catastrophic illness program. The flaws with that rationale have been pointed out. The idea that Charlene would need to wait until her medical bills add up to a certain amount, a certain dollar figure that's in the current statutes, so that she could qualify under the catastrophic illness program that's now grossly inadequately funded at your $1.9 million transferred from GR Med, that she would wait until her bills built up so she would qualify. By the time that occurs, she could be far down the line, because this is a first-come, first-served basis under the existing regulatory scheme for catastrophic illness. She would be in line behind other folks with higher income levels who don't necessarily could make use of the catastrophic illness program but are not as in dire straits as she would be to maintain her life and health. I really don't know what the rationale is underlying this decision. It wasn't discussed at the subcommittee level. I'm not sure if it was discussed in the Senate Finance Committee at any length, and is proposed here on the floor. So because of Amendment Number 1, Amendment Number 2 is absolutely critical. I think it's a shame that these folks are in such uncertainty and fear because of the actions of this legislature. Some of those folks read the Anchorage Daily News this morning with the big headline, Senate Restores Medical Money, or whatever exactly it was. I don't have the exact quote, but there's a headline in the Daily News that would make these people think that they're in the free and clear and that the status quo will continue. Funding for poor restored. Thank you to the senator from East Anchorage. I hope people read the next edition of the paper, because it'll be a different story because of the actions taken by the majority today. I hope members will reconsider their positions and fund the Germ Relief Medical Program. We would find ourselves with inadequate funding for catastrophic illness, adequate funding for General Relief Medical, and folks will get their medical needs attended to. Without Amendment Number 2, that will not be possible. We will have shut down General Relief Medical. We would have reinstated a program that was done away with years ago because it was deemed by budget writers a bottomless pit of medical expenses in this state, justified but deemed unaffordable by the budget writers. And that would be, I think, a real terrible path to go down with these Alaskans who depend on this for their medical care.
For the debate. Question before the body, shall amendment number 2 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary, record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 2 has failed to pass the Senate. The Senate will stand adjourned. Senator Taylor.
Yes, Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that we stand in recess until approximately 5 o'clock this afternoon, as we have several committee hearings that are already scheduled, and they're due to begin at 1:30.
Without objection, we stand in recess until 5 o'clock. Senate will come to order. Next item, next amendment.
Amendment number 3 by Senators Ellis, Adams, Duncan, Hoffman, Lincoln. Page 19, line 33. It's been distributed.
Wait till Senator Ellis. Senator Ellis, we have amendment number 3 before us. There is objection.
Mr. President, this amendment is comprehensive in nature. It's a multi-departmental number of BRUs covered, and what I'm proposing here with this amendment is to restore the increments proposed by the governor for his Smart Start proposal. I think it'd be fair to say that the Senate budget before us adds some increments for the child abuse problem in the state, which has been well documented and is horrendous, and we stack up very poorly against other states by anybody's measure. And while the Senate budget does account for some increments on the treatment end of...
Senator Mackey, I have amendment number 3 in front of me. I think he's speaking to number 4. I believe that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. President. The my order was different than, I guess, what came out on the desk. I apologize. I've moved amendment number 3, and it references municipal assistance and revenue sharing. The Senate budget before us proposes a reduction in municipal assistance and revenue sharing, and this amendment number 3 would bring us back to the amount proposed by Governor Knowles in his budget to us. In the last few days, members of the body have received communication from Mayor Rick Maestrom. This morning we received a communication from the Alaska Commission on Aging. The mayor makes the point that reductions in municipal assistance, which have been cumulative over the last couple of budget cycles, have put pressure on local property taxpayers. He finds that unacceptable and encourages us to restore those monies fully as proposed by the governor for these two programs that assist local governments in providing basic services. The Commission on Aging makes the connection between the underfunding of the senior citizen property tax exemption and the cuts that the majority's made over the last several cycles in municipal assistance and revenue sharing. The pressure that puts on local governments with continuing the senior citizen property tax exemption. In fact, folks in Anchorage, senior citizens, have been fairly up in arms about that. That's been reflected in letters to the editor and testimony before the Anchorage Assembly about that underfunding and the pressure that puts on other local property taxpayers. Again, that's exacerbated by the cut proposed in the Senate budget. The 2% reduction is likely to mean an increase, according to the mayor, in local property taxes. So those are the reasons that those of us in the minority are calling for the restoration of what Governor Knowles proposed for that assistance to local government.
Further debate. Question before the body. So amendment number 3 passed the Senate. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 3 has failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 4 by Senators Ellis, Adams, Duncan, Hoffman, Lincoln. Page 16, line 27, and it's been distributed.
Senator Ellis?
Mr. President, I move amendment number 4.
There is objection.
Okay. Mr. President, as I noted before, this is a Smart Start amendment bringing back increments that the governor proposed to comprehensively deal with the child abuse problem in the state. I think the lines are pretty self-explanatory, and I won't go through all the detailed information. I have it, though, here, what each dollar is spent on, if members have questions. Again, the Senate version of the budget is short on prevention. I don't know how we would ever expect to get a handle on the child abuse problem in the state and break this cycle of family violence if we don't fully address the proposals to deal with preventing child abuse. We never get ahead of the problem. And the problem is well documented. The impact of prevention programs are before us as well in various studies and information that's been presented to the subcommittee and to the full finance committee. And to say that we can't afford prevention efforts is to say that we can't afford to fully address the problem. So I would really encourage members to think about this and comprehensively address the child abuse problem in the state of Alaska. It's been a subject of great concern by the public, and I think we would be failing to fully and adequately address this if we don't beef up the increments for prevention. We never truly get ahead of the problem.
Further debate. Seeing no further debate, question before the body, shall amendment number 4 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. If any member fails to vote, Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 4 has failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 5 by Senators Duncan, Adams, Ellis, Hoffman, and Lincoln, page 7, line 13. It's been distributed.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 5.
There is objection.
President, Amendment number 5 addresses a very serious problem with the University of Alaska system. And let me say overall, I believe that we have not funded the University of Alaska system adequately over the past few years. That there's been a decrease in their ability to provide courses and provide quality education because of the lack of our stepping up the plate and providing the funding that's necessary for the University of Alaska system. For example, the 1998, or FY98 general fund operating budget for the University of Alaska, about $167 million, that's the same amount of funding they received in FY86, 10 years prior to that, over 10 years prior to that, and it represents a drop in real dollars of about $60 million, a loss in real dollars. The budget that's before you doesn't take care of that problem at all. Now, you may, some members of the body may look at the bottom line and say, well, wait a minute, in FY98 we were funding the university at 100 in general funds, 164,138, and the Senate proposal is 166,307, so we're giving them a $2 million increase. What that fails to show you is that there are contractual obligations, salary increases that need to be taken care of, and that the only ones funded, the contracts for the university were fully funded, but the non-covered people were not fully funded. Non-covered people were not funded at all, so the university is going to have to absorb about $1.6 million in unfunded obligations. As far as the non-covered employees go. So that really translates to another reduction for the University of Alaska system, a reduction below over what they were in FY98. I don't think that's acceptable. I don't think that's the way we should be approaching our higher education system in this state. I believe it needs stability in funding at a bare minimum, and it needs an increase in funding if we're really going to do the job right for our students who wanted to stay in the state and attend a good quality post-secondary education system. This budget does not do that. The unallocated reduction that was put in by the Senate Finance Committee means that the university will have to shift money from programs, from providing classes, providing services to students to cover some obligations that they have otherwise, and will again put the university in peril, at least from my viewpoint, and I think from the viewpoint of those who administer the university system, and from a viewpoint of numerous people in this state who believe that we do need and should have a strong university system in this state. This amendment, I believe, would go a long ways towards bringing stable funding to the university system and allow it to continue to move forward and provide quality classes.
Further debate. Seeing no further debate, question before the body. Shall amendment number 5 pass the Senate? Members, they proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary, record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 5 has failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 6 by Senator Ward, page 23, line 9. It's been distributed.
Senator Ward. I move amendment number 6.
There is objection.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment does, it puts into place the measuring programs that we have throughout this operating budget, and it gives the mission statements. But what it does, instead of site-specific on this particular item, it will be able to give us a percentage of reduction in recidivism in all therapeutic communities. And this is the language from the department in order to accomplish that instead of just one.
For the debate. Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I object to it because right now we don't have a therapeutic community program in Alaska, and the one that is being proposed, and there is, as I understand, just one being proposed in the Valdez therapeutic community program. And so for that reason, and I can understand that this is under the performance measures, and as the performance measure, that one of the things that we will have to look at is the percentage of reduction in the recidivism. And so for that reason, since we know that there is none other in the state of Alaska, and this is one that is being proposed, I would object to it at this point.
Senator Duncan.
May we have a please?
Senator will stand at ease. Is there further debate? Seeing no further debate, question before the body, shall amendment number 6 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary, has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary, record the roll. So by a vote of 15 yeas to 5 nays, amendment number 6 has passed the Senate.
Amendment number 7B by Senator Halford, page 3, line 25, following appropriation, has been distributed.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 7B. What it does is limit the CBR draw to up to $700 million. The current projection shows that at the expected revenue and the budget numbers, we will need $664 million. This simply provides that it is not a blank check, although it does allow some leeway.
Is there an objection? Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I heard the figures that the senator quoted about what the projected draw is of $644 million or whatever it is. You know, I'd like to know that myself and be able to see a sheet of paper in front of me that clearly lays out where we are heading with total expenditures this session. What is our spending plan? How much are we going to spend? We've got an operating budget before us, but how much are we going to spend in the capital budget as far as general fund dollars go? How much are we going to spend on new legislation? How much are we going to spend with any other in a supplemental bill that may come through yet, or in any other appropriation bill? What is the spending plan of the majority? This may be an amendment that I can support if I knew what the spending plan of the majority was. And I got to say that this is one of the first times in my many years of service, and it'll be the last time, that I don't see a spending plan. I mean, always before, there's been a spending plan put forward by the majority that clearly shows what they are going to project for expenditures and what their income is going to be and how much is going to be needed from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund as we're voting on the operating budget. We don't have that. And I believe, Mr. President, that this majority has a responsibility to provide not just to the Democrats, to the minority in this body, but also to the public, what they view as their spending plan and what the need is going to be from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. And I hope that the co-chair of finance has that on her desk and has just been able to pass it around to us at this point. I'd like to have it before we vote on this amendment. And I'd like to see if the co-chair of finance can clarify for me what the total spending is going to be by this legislative body.
Further debate. Seeing no further debate, question before the body. So amendment number 7 passed the Senate. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary, record the roll. So by a vote of 15 yeas to 5 nays, amendment number 7 is passed the Senate.
Secretary, move 7B. Does the Secretary have that correctly?
Amendment number 8 by Senator Hoffman, page 29, line 28, and it's been distributed.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 8.
There is objection. Senator, you have the floor.
Mr. President, basically what amendment number 8 would do, it's dealing with the commissioner's office in the Department of Fish and Game. It would add back approximately $193,000 to fully fund the commissioner's office as the as was requested by the governor. If this is not added back, this cut will result in the elimination of the deputy commissioner within the commissioner's office, as well as the associated travel and contractual funds. This cut will force the commissioner to inventory all functions currently being performed by the office with consideration given to funding sources, determine what duties can be reassigned to divisions and which duties will no longer be done. This office is currently very active in a variety of issues, including the Pacific State Marine Fisheries Commission, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the Pacific Northwest Endangered Salmon, Congressional Fish and Wildlife Legislation, U.S.-Russia boundary issues, subsistence, interaction with the boards of Fish and Game, the NPRA, and defending the state's interest in Glacier Bay. If these funds are not added back in, the level of reduction will compromise the department's ability to effectively participate in several of these major issues facing our state.
Senator Sharp.
Mr. President, I'd just like to make suggest that the technical corrections so that this would add up on this. I believe the new figure under GF instead of 473,323,1 would be 606,300, and under other instead of 300,270 it should be 370,200 to add up to the 966,500. And with that, having said that, I'm not speaking in favor of the amendment, but I would just say that the commissioner's office total budget, we funded the commissioner's office at this $5,100 over the FY98 authorized, and we funded the same positions we funded last year.
Further debate? Need no further debate. The question before the body, shall amendment number 8 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 8 failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 9 by Senator Hoffman, page 30, line 10, and it's been distributed.
Senator Hoffman.
I move amendment number 9.
There is objection.
Senator. Again, this amendment deals with the Department of Fish and Game. The BRU is the subsistence field offices. Basically, this would restore a reduction of 42.4 in general fund, and also fund the requested increment of $150,000 that was requested by the governor's office. The reduction is comprised of 42.4 reduction represents an additional 4% in general fund cuts from 1998 authorized. This is on top of a 17% cut in general funds from 1998 and a 23% cut over the past 2 years and 48% cut in the subsistence division since 1992. The proposed cut is in the division's field office component that funds the frontline staff in rural areas. Staff in the Arctic and interior would be severely impacted. And the $150,000 increment was intended to partially offset the cuts over the past several years that have crippled the division's subsistence data collection program. The cut of the increment further erodes the ability of the division to collect updated subsistence harvest and use information needed by the state to provide for subsistence. And a weaker state subsistence program makes it easier for the federal government to take over subsistence management of fish and game in the state of Alaska. The effects of the cut lead to management decisions by the state federal agencies that are not based on current subsistence harvest and use information.
management without good information negatively impacts subsistence, commercial fisheries, sports fisheries, general hunting by non-subsistence users. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further debate? Seeing no further debate, question before the body, shall amendment number 9 pass the Senate. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 9 has failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 10 by Senator Hoffman, page 30, line 11. It's been distributed.
Senator Hoffman?
Mr. President, I move amendment number 10.
There is objection.
The amendment number 10 is in the Department of Fish and Game's Habitat Division, in Title 16, Habitat Permitting. This would restore an increment of $300,000 for the Kenai River Center and permitting workload increases. And another, the general fund reduction eliminated the increment dealing with the permitting workload increase in the Matsu and Southeast, and based funding for the Kenai Center to replace CIP dollars. The Fish and Games funding reduction eliminates increments dealing with permit workload increases in the interior Alaska, Southeast, and Mat Valley. The number of permits are up by 675, or an increase of 38% from the previous year.
Further debate. Senator Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. President. In terms of Habitat and Department of Fish and Game, they were held harmless in this budget. They were fully funded at the same level they're currently funded. This was an increment that the senator from Bethel was talking about as increments were denied throughout the budget. However, Habitat did not take a reduction. They're at the status quo.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. The problem is that the workload is not status quo over last year. As I stated, they have the same amount of funds, but their total number of permits are up nearly 40%.
Further debate? Seeing no further debate, question before the body. Shall amendment number 10 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 10 has failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 11 by Senator Hoffman, page 28, line 24. It's been distributed.
Senator Hoffman.
I move amendment number 11.
There is objection.
Although I would like to thank the two members of the committee that worked on this component of commercial fisheries, I think we did a fairly decent job in funding the commercial fisheries program as compared to prior years, but still there was a reduction of some $92,200 in general funds, and this amendment would also restore the reduction of 67.4, which was maintains the division's technical publishing program. I think everyone is well aware that the commercial fisheries component in the state of Alaska more than pays its fair share, and I would recommend that the body approve this amendment.
Further debate. Senator Mackey.
Mr. President, I too, like the member from Bethel, want to thank the co-chair of finance in front of me from Fairbanks that chaired this particular subcommittee. I believe that I'm very happy with the Comfish budget this year, as he was. Also, the Finance Committee went additionally a step further the other night by restoring some additional general funds to the Commercial Fisheries Management Program, and representing 45 coastal communities from southeast to Kodiak, I'm very happy with the Fish and Game Commercial Fisheries Management budget as it was passed, so I will speak against this amendment. It's an extremely small reduction compared to the size of this budget, and look forward to seeing that work well.
Question before the body. Shall amendment number 11 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the roll. So by a vote of 5 yeas to 15 nays, amendment number 11 has failed to pass the Senate.
Amendment number 12 by Senator Green, page 18, line 9. It's been distributed.
Senator Green.
President, I would move amendment number 12.
There is objection, Senator.
This adds additional language to the intent language, At the table in Senate Finance, this was discussed, and it was implied that the money would include the continued planning of two satellite offices in the Matsu area and one in North Pole. However, the original language remained and listed only Anchorage, and we were contacted by DMV, and they said it would be better if the language were expanded so it did not limit it to only Anchorage location.
Is the objection maintained? Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I may not have a problem with this. I just want to be sure I understand that that was discussion in the Senate Finance Committee, that this language was supposed to include Matsu, two satellite offices in Matsu and one in North Pole. My concern is, of course, this is only intent language, but my concern is that with the budget they have, and if you do those satellite offices, what impact will it have on other communities and on other areas of the state as far as getting services? We're asking them to open, under this language, three more offices, and we're not increasing the money. So maybe someone could explain to me how their budget in FY99, this budget compares with FY98, and what the impact of this is going to be. And it may be a great amendment.
This language is intent language that went with an increment for DMV of $450,000, so they're getting almost $500,000 more. I would hope that they could put up quite a few kiosks all around the state to make the line shorter for people.
Senator Duncan.
Does a satellite office mean a kiosk? Is that what it means? When I think of a satellite office, you know, I think of something like Senator Taylor's legislative office. It's got very plush, lots of staff. Only kidding. I should have said the majority leader, but does it mean a kiosk or does it mean an office?
Senator Pierce.
Across the street in the state office building, just for the state employees. It's not very plush, but it was put there just for the state employees, and that's what we're talking about.
And let's say it's a kiosk and not a satellite office, because I just was concerned about what that did imply. And I understand it's late at night, and the co-chair is probably not in any better mood than any of the rest of us, but it was a good question, I think, and one that needed to be answered. And I know that the senator from Matsu is just dying to help answer.
Senator Grant.
On behalf of the satellite offices planned for the Matsu, they are to be privatized, very small offices, one toward Trapper Creek and one past Wasilla. And they're basically the direction in which DMV chooses to go in the rapidly growing Matsu Valley.
And same also for North Pole, to be a privatized office. Senator Duncan.
For to extend a helping hand, I'm going to withdraw my objection.
Hearing no objection, amendment number 12 has been adopted.
Amendment number 13 by Senator Lincoln, page 18, line 23.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 13.
There is objection.
See if we can get a roll going here. This amendment restores $79,600 to the Commissioner's Office in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development to fund a special assistant position. And I think, Mr. President, I probably made this motion last year as well, or this amendment. The Commissioner's Office has six positions in it: the Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, three clerical and support positions in Juneau and Anchorage, and the special assistant. The special assistant is the only position available for special projects, serves as a legislative liaison during the session, monitors activities of the various boards and commissions that the commissioner might sit on, and acts as her designee. Now, the special assistant's position is funded entirely from the interagency receipts. The department's division and the agencies fund this position as a part of their centralized management support under the reimbursable services agreements, and this decrement deletes the general fund personal services authorization. Now, Mr. President, I don't know if I need to remind this body, but the commissioner or her designee, which is usually the special assistant, is statutorily required to sit on boards and commissions, and some of the boards that she's required to sit on are the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation, Alaska Coastal Policy Council, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, Alaska Energy Authority, Alaska Railroad Corporation, Alaska Royalty Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board, Alaska Student Loan Corporation, Board of Marine Pilots, Power Project Loan Committee, State Bond Committee, and the Telecommunications Information Council. Those are the ones that she's statutorily required